The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Tanfin Radio, this is your host Mar Torres speaking. With me in the studio for the first time this year, I have Hassan Godwin.
I'm not really here.
You're a figment of my imagination.
Yes, exactly. I think I've been a figment of your imagination for 10 years.
That's not good at all.
I think you should actually hunker down and get yourself a co-host.
So when people are listening to the show, they're hearing you talk and in dead silence.
Yes. Either they're hearing you talk in dead silence, or they're hearing you talk and then they're hearing you do an impression of me talking. And Brian is just too nice to say anything to you.
Let him keep his delusion.
Yeah, exactly. The show's all right. So as long as it works.
Maybe that's why I think you're the same, a different person, because you don't hear all the time.
Right. Right. Every now and then. And I don't know how you explain Charlie. I guess Charlie is here, and Charlie's just let you deal with it also.
It's the id, the ego, and the superego.
Exactly. And I guess I'm the ego, and he's the superego.
So this is.
He's the senior correspondent.
What was that movie? Brad Pitt.
Fight Club.
Yeah. This is the
which
Fight
is,
Club
which
of Radio.
Is this right now is just you talking to you. You realize that,
exactly.
Right?
This is the Fight Club of Radio. Wonderful.
And actually, in your figure, if your imagination, you can't see Charlie. Charlie's been here since the beginning. You just don't see Charlie, and then you just project me.
Well, we have mentioned there's a ghost in this station. Whose name happens
whose
to be
name
Charlie?
Is Charlie. So maybe
it is.
Maybe
him.
That's. Maybe
and he's
that's,
been here this whole time.
That's what's been going on. You just haven't been figuring it out. So you just figured it out just now.
And now the show is over. That's it.
Well, I don't know why it has to be that fatalistic, but I guess the dynamic has changed. The show probably, it's over now.
Yeah. All right, so then we're gonna change the name again.
Let's roll those credits.
To, it was from the radio.
Yeah, it was, but it's not
anymore. It's not anymore.
We're getting out early. The show's over, we're getting out early.
So if anybody's having trouble listening to us on the air,
too bad, because you just missed a really great exchange between a man talking to himself.
You can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com, listen to us on the live audio
or
streaming.
Or the dead audio streaming, which is my favorite way of listening to things.
Yes.
Or dead audio streaming.
And also on the GBB website, you can see me talking to myself in the high-definition web camera. Unless you're listening to us in the future, which is technically our past.
Lord. Oh, my God.
Which is your present.
See, this is why I think we're not the same person, because I wouldn't put anybody through that kind of mental machination. But, all right, that's fine.
It actually makes me think of Paranormal Activity 5.
And five.
The
you
Paranormal
got to five.
Activity series.
I didn't get past three. The third one. Where the pots and no, that was the second one where the pots and pans were all upside down. It's like,
yeah.
No, but the third one was where everything was in the kitchen and everything was floating. When they panned over, everything was kind of floating in the kitchen in the middle of or the chairs had gotten stacked in the middle. Something happened in the third one.
Yeah.
And the kids were all acting loopy, and that's when I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. So I didn't get to five. So there have been two more after that, you're telling me.
Yes, there's number five. And what I find interesting about it, separately, the movies aren't very good. But if you put the whole thing together, it's actually an interesting
story.
That's
the Star Wars argument. That's the episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 argument right there. Alone, they're not that great. But together, it's amazing.
So, like, if they would have taken out, like, an hour of each movie and slapped them all together to make one movie...
It'd be the most horrific movie that you've ever seen.
Yeah, because, you know, they give you little tidbits of information throughout, and then they keep on going back and forth and back and forth. And then the fifth one, which I would say out of all of them, was an actual, like, an actual movie, and they didn't even care about the whole hidden camera, you know, handheld camera movie. Because up until this movie, every other one, there's an excuse, there's a reason, we have to keep on filming for whatever reason.
Right, for whatever.
And the best one, I would say, would be Quarantine, because it was complete darkness, and they're like, well, we have to keep the camera on, because they need the light from the camera. So they made an effort. In this one,
unlike Cloverfield, where a guy's being chased by a giant monster, and he's still turning around to zoom on the monster every now and then.
Exactly. But this one, they don't even care. It's like, this is just how it's going to be. He's going to be holding the camera for no reason throughout the parts of the movie, and he's going to put the camera down so we can't see all the other stuff because they can't afford the special effect needed for a movie.
Okay.
If you get past that, I'm like, this movie's actually pretty good.
If
stuff's
you get
happening.
Past that.
Past the giant.
Here's the difference between us. I don't ever think that there's something that you need to get past in order to make that movie great.
There's certain things like Fast and Furious 5 and 6, which is the only two I've seen in this series.
Wow.
If you get past the ridiculousness of it and don't take it seriously, they aren't so bad.
There's a level of disconnect that you have to have. There's a suspension of disbelief about precision driving and all that other stuff. But I'm saying,
and how you can drive a car and go faster when you're not even foot is on the gas.
Yeah, well, I don't consider that getting past. I consider that just accepting the medium for what. I mean, if you've been riding the train from 1 to 6, there's a level of disconnect that you already have.
Well, I jumped in late.
But I mean, I'm talking about like the application of logic. If you have to completely shut off, like once you get past the fact that this is the sixth movie, and you get past the fact that Vin Diesel is supposed to be a woman, and you get past the fact that when you're starting to chip away at the problems like that, and then underneath like five layers you find a halfway decent movie, you're probably talking about a really bad movie, and you're being very, very liberal about your
I would
opinion.
Say if it wasn't a handheld camera movie, it would have been a decent movie. That's what I'm saying.
That's
like,
the problem. That's the whole premise. The whole premise of the story.
But in this one, it kind of really isn't. They just kind of like,
it just needs to stop. Do they end it? Do they figure out what the whole thing is and who the marked are and without spoiling it?
They do explain a lot more in this one, and they connected all four movies. Because the first one was there, and then the second one connected
the
to the first
one.
And
you find out that the two sisters were, like, products of witches. Or
right.
Some, you know, some crazy. It's always witches.
Right.
It's always, like,
those wacky witches.
Yeah. And I know a couple of witches in real life, and they're very boring, by the way.
And the fourth one, you know, they kind of just went on a little tangent. This one, based on the trailers, you're thinking, oh, this is going to suck. This has nothing to do with any of the other ones. This is in Los Angeles or, you know, whatever, with the target demographic involved in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not white people sitting around going, hey, this
continuously
not believing.
Mocking the supernatural powers that are trying to haunt them.
So in this one, there's stuff happening. They're moving around like, oh, well, this ain't good. Or, you know, and then they tie it all together. It's like, wow. They
well done.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, Paranormal Activity guys. it raises two questions about, hey, what happened to these people, which could be number 6, but I'm satisfied with everything that happened. All right. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
So, which had about the
congratulations,
you know, the whole
Paranormal
back
Activity,
back and forth and whatnot.
I probably still won't be seeing you, but congratulations, Paranormal Activity.
Wow, go on. So now let's do take away with the news.
Mark says Mark should take it away with the news.
and as we've been doing for the year 2014, the news is brought to you by the Rat Bastards down at Belmore Towing. So if you ever get stuck,
man. this is not an endorsement.
If you ever get stuck in New York, and you call AAA, and Belmore Towing comes, and you feel like getting ripped off, make sure they tow your car to their place, because they have a 2004 screw you over deal.
Well, they were the first show in American history to do anti-sponsors. That's fantastic.
Well, they will, you know,
negative sponsor.
Make sure they work within the confines of the law, yet renew for every dollar.
Towing does not sponsor It Came From The Radio. It Came From The Radio sponsors Belmore.
Yes, we are a proud sponsor of these rat bastards who want to take your money in the most legal way possible. They will put the people on Wall Street to shame. It's how well they wow. run their corporation.
Wow. So have remember. They become your number one enemy? Because I know.
Shia LaBeouf has gotten knocked down.
Yeah, because he's quitting public life.
Yes, that's a matter of fact. That is your news. Speaking of that, that is exactly.
Segue.
What Shia LaBeouf is doing.
See, I segued yourself for you. For you. Me as you. Right. Segued for you as you.
Yes. So my arch enemy, who's also your arch enemy.
Yes,
because
right? Yeah, by proxy.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia!
Has announced that he's done with social media.
So he's not done acting. He's not done. Because I never read that article. But it just looked like he was done with public life in general.
But that doesn't mean he's not going to, you know, whore himself out for some money and move
some
movies.
He's going to do movies. He's going to continue to do movies. He's just not going to.
He's done with social media.
No.
Because after what happened.
Can you explain
as
what happened?
As we explained last week because you weren't listening.
Well, I was.
Nicely done.
I was, yeah.
Basically.
Dying, so I'm sorry.
Well, you were not dying because you're...
I was busy not dying.
Yes.
I was very busy
you're
not...
You're too busy not dying.
Yes, not being dead.
Right. Just to sum it up, for okay. those of you who missed last week's episode and yes. didn't go to the archives.
No.
Shia LaBeouf made a movie. The movie was done a couple of years ago. It came out online, and it just so happened that the movie... was probably word for word, scene from scene, taken from a comic book by another artist whom they're not connected to in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
And because it was online, you're like, hey, doesn't this look like that over there? And the artist was like, hey, it is look like my stuff. And they're like, hey, Shia, didn't you get that from there? He goes, well, you know, I kind of, sort of, maybe, kind of, just sort of saw it and... I was inspired
but
by
he did it himself. So this is a Shia LaBeouf movie. He wrote directed.
And directed
wow.
this movie.
Did he star in it?
No, it was Jim Gaffigan was the star.
Wait,
comedian,
so
only stand-up comedian.
I'm sorry if this is intriguing beyond above and beyond, but Shia LaBeouf,
yes,
who's like 30 something,
yeah,
right. He wrote and directed. A movie.
Right. Called...
Shia LaBeouf's movie. And he wrote and directed Shia LaBeouf movie. And he has someone
else. Howard Cantor.
Howard Cantor?
That was the name of the film.
That's the name of the film?
Right.
Okay. Starring...
Jim Gaffigan.
Wow. I'll never remember any of that. There's too many names. But he wrote and directed this movie. And rumor has it, very strong... confirmable rumor has it that
yes.
he stole the entire premise
he
for the
plagiarized
film.
The entire film because it was based off of
a comic book.
A nearly word for word adaptation of a comic book in 2007 called Justin M. Damiano. Damiano. Justin M. Damiano.
Justice and Damiano or
yes.
Damiano?
Damiano. Damiano.
Okay, Damiano.
That's the name of the comic.
I had a teacher named Mr. Damiano.
So
in school,
they were so.
Or you did,
yes.
As things go, but okay. So the comic's called Justin M. Damiano,
right? And then there was a movie called Howard Cantor, starring Jim Gaffigan.
So not only did he steal the idea and this and the premise and word for word, but he de-ethnicized the main character, who was
well,
clearly
Jim
Italian,
was a white guy.
he was clearly Italian,
right?
In the
comic. Correct, correct.
And he's a waspy guy
correct,
in the
correct.
In the movie. Okay.
So then they approached him and he's like, well, he kinda sorta said that he was inspired by it, but it wasn't a plagiarism. They're like, well, that's not good enough. So then he was like, well, I'm gonna start apologizing for this because, you know, I effed up. So he started apologizing and he put tweets on and he actually paid a Skywriter. He paid a Skywriter to put an apology in the air.
The
I'm sorry. But it turns out that the tweets were taken from other apologies from other celebrities.
No.
Yes.
No.
Which I quoted last week.
I know you did. I was sick and dying and not dying.
About the apologies, and then people are like, well, hey, those apologies look awfully familiar.
Okay, all right.
No, but we didn't get to this week's news.
We're going to get to that.
All right.
This week's news in a minute.
Okay.
What is wrong?
I knew he was going to like this.
With everybody and the tweeting, that's A. First of all, what's wrong with Shia LaBeouf, who's been around, he's worked with everyone. He's worked with Will Smith, he's worked with... Steven Spielberg, Michael Bay, everybody. He's Indiana Jones' son, for goodness sake. Okay? He worked with Michael Douglas. He worked with everybody.
That's right.
Okay? How come he doesn't know you can't just plagiarize a movie and put it out, be high profile, and get away with that? How come he never came across that in his travels?
Maybe no one told
him. That's baloney. And, okay. Then he tweets. How come he doesn't realize it? How come nobody realizes this Twitter thing? How come Hassan Godwin, very small, perhaps a figment of Mark Torres' imagination, although I do think I do have a life of my own, but sometimes it's iffy. I have realized in the small little sphere of influence I have, in the small spectrum, I have realized that if I say something in Twitter, it's a public statement.
Right.
The whole world reads, if they are so inclined,
maybe
can read what I say.
Shia LaBeouf has his apology so well thought out that it cannot fit within 40 characters. So he had to steal somebody else's to express his sorrow. And then he apologizes for the fake apologies. Right? And then we get to this week's news.
Take it away with this week's
which
news.
Which is that he's decided that he's done.
He's
with social media.
Really?
Because
he doesn't know, because he's a moron and doesn't know how to navigate social media. He has now decided that social media is the enemy and he should have nothing to do with it.
Correct. And this might have to do with the fact that his follow-up movie that he's going to do called Daniel Boring.
I'm sorry. That was something in my throat.
Which has nothing to do with the artist that he plagiarized before, which his name was Daniel Klaus. Boring. Happens to be another graphic novel belonging
called
Daniel Klaus. So,
wow.
His next movie is going to be another plagiarize of the same guy. He can't even plagiarize somebody else.
Let this be a lesson to you, Mark, that your enemies, you don't have to do anything to your enemies. Blockbuster, Shia LaBeouf, they all destroy themselves eventually.
That's true, but there's still,
New York and the NY.
Snow and cold and lawyers.
They're not going to beat the snow.
And punk kids and,
Kid, oh my God. You crotchety old man. Okay.
There's also circumstances and time. So, I gotta fight some concepts.
You gotta narrow down your enemies. You gotta stop declaring elements your enemies. That helps.
So.
Trust me. Because the elements will be better. I decided a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think I was able to be on the show
last year.
To express my revelation. But, some people who know me personally know I have particularly a long and tedious, ongoing, and very vitriolic war with Christmas.
Right.
And I came to the decision a couple of days before Christmas 2013 that I'm losing the war against Christmas. As I said to my one of my good friends, who might be one of your good friends, in the world of where I'm a figment of your imagination, Christmas is getting stronger every year. I'm getting weaker every year.
Started the day after.
Right after Thanksgiving. It's expanded everything.
Actually, I would say it started after Halloween.
It starts after Halloween. Christmas is actually on Thanksgiving now. It's not the day after. There's no such thing as Black Friday. It's Black Thanksgiving evening. It's right. We give thanks and then we go out and we start bashing heads trying to get
The people we're just thankful for.
Yes, exactly. So Christmas is all powerful and Hassan is not.
So my arch enemy should not be snow.
Yes,
and cold.
Because snow is just gonna get, especially global warming and all this craziness. It's just gonna get stronger every year, and you are gonna get weaker.
All right.
You're not going to be able to fight snow.
So I'm gonna die.
Also, I will suggest maybe
in Manhattan, surrounded by cops, lawyers, and Shia LaBeouf.
Right. I would also suggest maybe naming the entire city of Manhattan one of your enemies. Another self-defeating kind of prospect, along with the NYPD.
Well, I don't say NYPD. No, police in general.
Police in all police.
And I have to say that
everywhere, French police are your enemy.
There are certain police officers who I am friends with, and they say, "Hey, how could you hate police?" I said, "Well, you don't count because you're my friend."
How do you? All right. Well, but you kind
of. I have a friend who's a lawyer. I have a couple of friends who are lawyers. They don't count because they're not real lawyers.
There's
got to
be
first.
More news. Just go over the news.
So yes, Shia LaBeouf is done with Twitter. He's probably going to make another movie based off of plagiarizing the first guy's movie.
Yeah, he's going to make a movie being done with Twitter.
He's already.
who's going to be robbing some other guy who is done with Twitter.
In a cease and desist lawsuit type situation with this guy.
Good God.
So yeah, good luck, Shia. Good luck, Shia. You know.
No, you don't mean that. He's one of your enemies. don't be Mark Torres' enemy, because basically you tweet yourself out of existence, or you blockbuster yourself out of existence.
I didn't know that's the term. Now you blockbuster yourself out of business.
I guess.
Wow. All right. I did do a little jig when.
Yeah, I know you did.
Moving on. Jack Bauer is returning to television. Seems that Fox has decided to bring back its long-running series 24 in May for a summer series.
Really?
However, the executives at Fox have decided that they will only make 12 episodes instead of 24. And they also decided that they were going to make a 24 movie, which was in the works for a long time, and they decided that, quote, "They've always had an idea of maybe someday doing feature films. But going into it, they all agreed that 24 being compressed in 2 hours is not 24. So instead, they're going to do 12 hours of 24.
I don't have enough outrage for this.
And
I can't even express how dumb that sounds.
It will feature, with each episode, will be jumping around during points of the day as opposed to doing it 1 hour at a time. So as I was upset last week about taking something and removing all the elements that made it important and putting it out there, they're going to take a show called 24 about a guy's day in the life, 1 hour at a time, shot in real time for 24 hours. They're going to cut that in half and then jump around during the course of the day like a regular show. So why in the world would they call it 24?
They're not going to call it 12?
It's going to be 24, but it's going to be 24 condensed into 12. That's the subtitle.
You should call it 24 divided by 2.
There you go. So 24 divided by 2. That would be better. At least that's truth in advertising.
Yeah, and they get to keep 24 in the title.
Yeah, and they won't even have the clock anymore. It's just like a stopwatch. You know,
I got to confess, I've never watched an episode of 24. Although, since you've watched 24, I might have watched all of the episodes of 24 and not know it.
24.
But I've never watched it. I didn't even know who you meant by when you said Jack Bauer returns to television. Who the heck is that?
Yes, Kiefer Sutherland, by the way.
I figured that.
24 was a unique show where they decided to do a groundbreaking idea, which they weren't even sure was going to work.
I know the premise.
Right.
Which was a clever premise.
They've tried before with other things. The only thing I think off the top of my head would be a movie called Nick of Time, which was shot in real, quote-unquote, real time with Johnny Depp.
Right.
And 90% of the movie was shot in real time. You know, what happens in this hour and a half guy's life. And then he had like a dream sequence and that threw off the whole time thing. But this is, it's an hour. And it was like, it kind of reminded me of the first Die Hard, where, you know, you really felt for this guy. And it was more of a drama with a little action put in. And he had to save the president.
Right.
And you're sitting here thinking, how are they going to get through this? And they did. And halfway through the show, it was so good. Because the bad guys really had him by the cojones. You're like, wow, how's he going to get out of this? And he only has so much time. You know that it's going to happen, that this is the end, this is how he's going to get there. So how are you going to get there? How are you going to figure it out?
And it's kind of like someone when by the eggs.
It was.
It's just really strange to me.
It was a.
I got him by the eggs. Okay.
It was the same feeling I had at the end of episode 1 in Star Wars. I'm thinking, wow, all right, here we are, and we know where we're going to wind up. How are we going to get from here to there? But in this case, it's an hour at a time. How is it going to... And they really pull it together so much so that every other season, they were like, well, we're just going to make 24 episodes all the way through.
They pull it off to an extent, because I've heard, this is secondhand information, it's the quality started to diminish.
It goes up and down.
And how long was it on originally?
Five seasons, I believe. Five and a half seasons.
Five? Only five 24s?
I believe it might have been more. It feels like one, two, three. I'm going to say like five, plus they had the writer strike. So I'm going to say five, 6 years.
Oh, all right.
They went on pretty far. And certain times, you know, they...
So technically, after 5 years... It's only been 5 days for Kiefer Sutherland.
Right, but it's different times,
yeah, so
years
that's
away.
Yeah, that's why it explains how he looks older.
Right.
Okay.
But each one was a 24-hour time period. And I do have to think, I might be wrong. It probably is more. It feels like more, but I'm gonna go with five.
Okay.
I'm going to just say five, and I'll be wrong. Why not? But yeah, it was really well done. And then just the same problems that they had with the Die Hard series, they kind of went off from what it was about to more focus on more of the action. And, you know, where we wound up from where we started is a completely different thing. But you still kind of felt for it, and especially how it ended. Like, they ended it on such a downer. They really hit home. You know, he saved the day, but, you know, spoiler alert, he didn't manage to do everything he had set out to do in the beginning of the show. And you're sitting there like, wow. And then it ended like, oh, this sucks. And then done.
But Fox is just going to bring it back.
Fox no explanation to bring it back.
Just going
to
bring a show back, even though it canceled the show.
They canceled it because they felt that it was running its course. They were kind of, you know, you have to come up with the whole idea from the beginning. Because if you kind of do it as you go along, you're going to mess up stuff. You're going to get lost along the way.
Pesky studio execs got to the 13th plateau of the search for more money.
Yeah.
And realized, we need another 24 right here.
But right.
Call it 24, make divide it only 12, because making a two-hour movie at 24 was ridiculous.
And not have it hour by hour. That's the worst part of it all. The whole thing was, and, you know, as the show went on, they did the little cheats, like, oh, you know, how can he stay awake for 24 hours, or a man can stay awake for 24 hours, and everything, no matter where they were, was always 15 minutes away from everywhere else. That was the cheat, because you're like, well, at this time of traffic, he wouldn't make it there at all, like, nope.
Stuck at the bridge.
And then the one when he was in New York, which was the last one, I'm living in New York, I'm like, there's no way you can get there from there. No, like, then he has to take the bridge, and then there's, yeah, and then the, you know, there's construction, and there's
the helicopter.
Right, exactly. So you have to give it a little bit, just, you know, a little bit. And they've said it, you know, this is the only way it's going to work, or else you're going to have him in an hour in traffic. That's the whole episode, him in traffic, because it's an hour.
You know, if they had pulled that off, that would have been a great show.
Exciting.
Yeah, they made it exciting. Just one guy. One entire hour in traffic.
Commercial goes. And even what they did was, whenever the commercial happens, the time frame still was going on. So stuff happened during the commercial break.
Wow.
When they came back. So it was, you know, the time
was.
It was a heck of a show. So now they're going to ruin it.
Yeah, of course.
Ruin it.
Well, I got a piece of news that you may or may not have.
From the desk of Hassan Gala, who may or may not be myself.
Do you know about the Friday 13th reboot?
I did not.
Okay. There is going to be a new Friday 13th reboot, because even though there was a reboot.
In,
yeah, the last reboot didn't boot as booting goes. It didn't boot as hard as it was supposed to boot.
So it was 2009, Friday 13th. Boot harder.
Right. Paramount got the rights to Friday 13th back, and they said, we're going to reboot it again, because this is the time to reboot things.
And this is what we do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take these boots off, and once I put these new boots on, I will have rebooted.
Correct.
Right? They have decided, or there is a speculation, that the new Friday the 13th will be a handheld camera movie and may not
have Jason in it.
May not be any Jason Voorhees in iconic slasher. Jason Voorhees may not be the villain. This is, I'm reading from MovieWeb, so we're not plagiarizing like Shia. iconic slasher Jason Voorhees may not be the villain in the impending Friday the 13th reboot. When asked if Derek Mears, who played Jason in the 2009, was going to play the new Jason in this impending reboot of a reboot of a reboot of a reboot, Fuller, who is the Bradley Fuller,
right,
executive producer,
executive
said,
producer,
I don't know, because I don't know if we're going to have Jason. I don't know which Jason we're going to use, because I don't know if we're going to have a Jason in the first place. I love Derek Mears. I love working with him. He's a dream to work with. But if we don't have a Jason, he might not be, might not be a place for him in the story. That's a paraphrasing of what he said. Around that time, I imagine that the people there at the press conference all started losing their minds. And gasping and throwing up and scratching each other with broken bottles. Because the whole idea of a Friday 13th without Jason Voorhees...
is akin to the Halloween
about Michael Myers, which was Season of the Witch, which is widely pilloried as the worst Halloween movie. And there have been some doozy bad Halloween movies since Halloween 1 to 100. I don't know. I forgot where they stopped. I think 99. They stopped at Halloween 99. So, there you have it. Not only are we getting another reboot from 2009, from the 2009 reboot of Friday the 13th, but we're going to get, it's going to be a shaky camera movie. And it might not have Jason Voorhees in it. To which
unless
you would say...
Jason Voorhees is the one holding the camera.
What? And in that, that is absolute perfection. If we could have that...
at the end of the movie, he'll turn it around, and he'll be the guy in the hockey mask the whole time. You're like, oh!
I don't like reboots. I think reboots are the one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. However, if they did that, I would be the champion of that reboot. I was like, this movie was horrible up to that last 2 seconds, which made the movie perfect.
And he went, kill now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty, so with that, we're going to take our break. We'll
thank
be right
God
back
for breaks.
With Campin' Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back where we came from the radio. Welcome back with Mark Torres and Hassan Godwin.
Mark Torres.
And Hassan Godwin pretending to be Mark Torres.
Yeah, or Mark Torres pretending to be Hassan
and
Godwin.
And our senior correspondent, who's not here, but he's actually here,
yes,
sitting next
sitting
to
sitting right there. I don't know why you can't see him. He's been here the entire time.
He's been here before we've been here.
Yes, he's been contributing to the conversation. You just haven't acknowledged
him. If you remember when we were at a different station, and it was the same station but different building.
Yeah.
And when we came in, you know, they had to make this thing. He was there.
Yeah, he was. And that's how he joined the show.
Yeah, he just I'm just oh wow.
All right.
I guess he's one of us now.
We just went with it.
One of us. So this week we're going to be talking about directors, something that we have an affinity for, and something that is always popular whenever a movie is going to be announced. They say, "Well, this guy's going to be a director," and they go, "Oh, well, this is going to be great because this guy's a director," or "Oh, this is going to be terrible because this guy's a director." I was just mentioning After Earth, which was a M. Night Shyamalan movie. He was the director.
Shyamalama Ding Dong.
Now, personally, I'm thinking I don't see what he contributed to the movie. Because, you know, I've seen his other works, and I'm like, I don't see a connection. I mean, the director is the one who's quote-unquote in charge of the movie. He tells people what to do. He directs.
Right.
Of course, they are producers.
Well, they do more than just that.
And they have the second unit director, so sometimes the director doesn't even shoot certain parts of the movie.
Certain like unimportant parts, like car chases, like they call it coverage, where a car, like, you know, a car backs up or whatever, and they're doing a car backing up, and then they cut to the guy
inside
the car, and his hand is shifting the car, so you cut to the hand shifting from into second or third gear, and then they cut back to the car moving. So the second unit is probably shooting the car,
right?
And then they have a third unit that does the coverage of the hand,
right,
that's shifting, and then they marry it all together, and they slap Brad Pitt's face on it, and then suddenly it's Brad Pitt in a car shifting and zooming down the highway.
Right. So the question is, how important is a director to a production overall? Because certain movies, you know, you think, well, it doesn't matter who the director is. He's just a guy that's telling people what to do. Or in certain cases, you're like, wow, this guy has a vision, and he kind of makes it his own thing. So where does the director sit in the whole world of making a movie?
I think their director sits pretty high. I used to have a friend. I don't used to. He's still my friend. Like,
is he still alive?
Yes, okay. He's still alive, and he's still my friend.
Well, he doesn't know anymore.
Mike,
he's not his friend anymore. Oh, what did I do?
I think Mike Vaccaro, and we used to work together at when I was a man on the inside of the Acclaim Comics.
Right,
and he was big on directors. He thought directors were the godsend, you know, Cat's Meow, whatever. And when we were younger, I was like, the director, it's a writer. The writer is most important. And I'm still right that the writer is an important component, even though the writer is completely disrespected in Hollywood, according to most writers. But he was absolutely right in the sense that the director is pretty much the most important component in movie making that they have, I didn't come to his philosophy to respect his philosophy up until I think Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
And Gore Verbinski is the director for Pirates of the Caribbean, and Pirates of the Caribbean could have been a disaster. I mean, it could have, it was the right place, right time for a lot of that stuff. A pirate movie was
based on a ride.
Yeah, give me a break. You know, that's not going to work. And the audience was willing to accept pirates as an interesting, you know, subject matter. But also, he did such a fantastic job with that film, and with iconic imagery. And, you know, the strength of you know, just sequences, his sequential events and stuff like that, that it helped a good script and it helped a great actor like Johnny Depp, and it helped an audience that was willing to accept pirates as an interesting pastime, all come together with pretty much a great product. I think the Curse of the Black Pearl is a pretty much a great movie. Personally, I say that because I saw The Ring, which is also done by Gore Verbinski, which is also a
that's creepy.
Yeah, which is also another it's a remake of a Japanese horror movie called Ringu.
Right.
And it could have been a disaster. The subject matter was was ludicrous. It was creepy. It was well done. It's a great subject matter for a ghost story, but it's a ludicrous subject matter. And if the director didn't take it seriously, didn't imbue it with all this this terrifying imagery and stuff like that, it wouldn't have worked. And it was a fantastically horrific experience when I first saw it. And it's because of this guy. This guy's doing the same thing. He's got the same quality of visuals, the same mastery of pacing and whatever. I could tell it was Gore Verbinski. Not offhand, like not watching it. It's like, hey, this is a Gore Verbinski movie, but I could tell once I knew it was him directing it. I could see little hints that how he was putting the whole film together. And I was like, well, this guy, you give this guy anything and he's going to be able to, you know, do a great job with it. You give him a good script, you give him a horror movie, he's going to make a great horror movie. You give him a pirate movie, if he can make a horror movie out of this ridiculous subject and a pirate movie based off of a game that works, then this guy is a master. And you can only say that's the director, because everything's different. There's no Johnny Depp in The Ring. There's no, you know, the writer's completely different.
Right.
The characters, the actors are completely different. Subject matter is different. The music is different. Everything is different. The only thing that's the same is the director. And they're both really great, masterful movies. They both started really powerful franchises that pretty much threatened to fizzle and die the minute they walked away from it. He also did, unfortunately, he's not always successful. In saying that, I'm saying commercially,
right?
Because he did The Lone Ranger,
Lone Ranger.
Yeah, I was about to say I liked The Lone Ranger too. I think it was visually. I remember watching The Lone Ranger and going, "This is beautiful." Like, there's a lot of sequences and a lot of shots. Like, that is just absolutely beautiful. You know, the movie was a little spotty at times. The pacing was kind of off. But
the biggest complaint I've heard was that pacing was off on Lone Ranger, and I think I enjoyed it because I saw it in little pieces.
Right, probably.
So I didn't have that effect of, oh, this is pacing.
The pacing was off, but it was beautiful. Like, wow, whoever's doing this movie, this is a gorgeous movie. And then I found out at the end it was Gore Verbinski. So I'm like, well, that makes perfect sense.
So then it's more that the director can be a master of his craft and can put his signature on it, but most directors don't. You know, there was The Cycle. Alfred Hitchcock made The Cycle, and then
the remake.
They did it wasn't even called
Shot for Shot.
So you watch the two movies; it's kind of the same thing. So what did that director do? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know anything about. Because I didn't come prepared. I can't really talk about. I actually did not see the Shot for Shot remake.
I saw the original the night before, and then I went to the movies and saw the remake. So I had a clear, you know, in my clear comparison. I'm saying anything. It's just like the other one, and I found it. I actually appreciated what he was trying to do, because in an interview he said, "I wanted to make a movie kind of like a play. You make a play, you have a whole cast, and then the play runs its course, and then you make a new play, the same play, and you put the different people the same thing."
Right.
And you're like, that's genius. But everybody's like, oh, we're going to remake it. I'm like, no, it kind of was a good idea, and he executed it very well, and it was maybe one or two slight differences in like a line, a throwaway line or something, but other than that, I'm sorry.
I don't know if I would agree with that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate what he's trying to do.
All right. Well, I don't know if I agree with a shot for shot. I mean, I do. I come from the same camp. But why would you do that? If you're saying that you like the Hitchcock version so well,
right,
that you want to reshoot it exactly like Hitchcock, why? if you liked his version well enough, then he's done a good enough job. If you like his version well enough to want to redo it, to spend millions of dollars and thousands of man hours to redo it, then how much respect do you really have for the original? To me, it's like I understand, in the context of remakes, I understand the idea of I would like to make this movie again with some of the tropes and the gags and the guffaws of modern day on an old movie. So a movie from 50 years ago, I want to remake it now and see how we would do it now.
Well, how would they update it?
Right. That makes sense, even though I usually don't like most of those remakes, most of those kind of remakes. If you're going to take a shot-for-shot remake, I don't understand what the purpose is. It just, to me, it's like, well, if you like it, if you like the original so much that you have to redo the shot to perfection, why isn't the original good enough? You know, why isn't that a good enough version? If you like it so much you're going to redo it exactly like that, then why wasn't the original good enough for you? What was the purpose of yours? It's like an experiment. I just want to see if I can do it. I understand that. But then there's a lot of... It's a business. That's a lot of money. And like I said, thousands of man hours.
Yeah.
To, you know... Look, even Michael Bay has a signature on movies. I'm not very particularly fond of it.
Those are the big... That's what I'm saying. The big name directors. Because if I did not know... what was that one? Super 8 was...
was J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams' movie. Watching it, I was like, oh my god, because thanks to myself, who is you, like, well, you know, he has a whole lot of lens flare in his movies.
I did.
And I'm like, no, he doesn't. And then I'm sitting there like, oh my god, there's lens flare all over this place. What the hell? And on top of that, it wasn't even a good movie. And on top of that, it made no sense because metal and magnets pull metal, not just particular metal. God, that bothers me. They got a giant magnet. People have braces in their teeth. Not being pulled. People with guns are being pulled up. Cars not being pulled up. Tanks not being pulled up. What the hell?
Someone put a filter on that damn camera.
So now
get those lens flares out of there.
So now it's all over the place. I'm thinking, oh my god, this is horrifying how much lens flare it is. And then of course, you see Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then there he goes. I'm like, well, is that his direction? Is that his thing? Like, I'm just gonna throw some lens flares in there. Well, I'm just gonna blow stuff up.
In keeping with the subject matter, J.J. Abrams did that to himself because he has a special feature, a featurette on the Star Trek DVD.
Okay.
About lens flare. Because, and here we go with this ridiculousness. People think. All movies, all films have now pretty much moved to digital.
Right?
Thank you, George Lucas. He was the first one. It was all moved on over to digital. I remember a huge argument that they had with digital versus film.
Yes.
And they were all upset. They're saying George Lucas is going to ruin everything, blah, blah, blah. And now, a day is everyone's using digital.
Right.
However, J.J. Abrams says, well, if we have digital, we don't have flair. I like lens flare because I like old films. I like original film because every now and then you caught the imperfections of lens flare or whatever, and it just kind of made it feel that there's something about how it felt. Mostly
the organic.
Spielberg had a lot of lens flare in his films. One particular I can think of is Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a couple of sequences with lens flare.
The arc and the yeah. Okay, gotcha.
And us in our generation, not knowing anything about it as we're coming up, just think that this is, you know, kind of another otherworldly effect. It's really beautiful, blah, blah, blah. He wants to duplicate that. But in typical modern fashion, instead of using film, he's just going to find a way to produce artificial lens flare in the digital media. So... taking someone's accidental, you know, someone's happy accident.
Right.
Which probably drove Spielberg crazy. It's like, how do we get these lens flares out of this picture? He has decided, when I was a kid, I saw a lens flare and I really liked it. I'm going to put lens flare in my movies on purpose. And then he overdid it, as he's wont to do, because every person now who's doing something wants a signature. Instead of like making a good film, which is like Sidney Pollack and Spielberg and the rest of those guys did, they made good films over and over and over again. And they have their quirks, But that's basically what they did. Modern filmmakers just want a stamp. Like Tarantino and gore, and bad language, that's his stamp, although I happen to like Tarantino movies. Abrams' stamp is lens flare, and he, in my opinion, very arrogantly celebrated that in his featurette about how he would stand off to the side and flash a flashlight or flash a light into the camera's perspective so that you could get a lens flare. It's so now he's got the reputation for being the lens flare guy, and he's regretful about using as much lens flare as he did, but he celebrated it in one of his DVD featurettes, which means you did it to yourself, jerk. That's like Michael Bay being upset that there's explosions in his movies.
I got too many explosions.
Yeah. I don't know why I get this reputation for it. It's like, stop it. You blow things up on a regular basis.
And going back to Shyamalan and like Shyamalan.
Yes,
he's like, I'm not a twist guy, but that was his thing. That
was absolutely his thing. If he says that wasn't his thing, that's ridiculous.
And he's upset that, you know, so that's why they went out of their way to not let people know that After Earth was his movie, and he only put it on at the very end after you were already disgusted after what you saw. Like, well, it doesn't hurt. Or even Avatar. And you're like, oh, that was his? And where's the twist? There's no twist. The twist was that it was crap. That was the twist. I'm going to go see a movie. This is the twist. It's not really a good movie at all. Ha ha.
They did that with Spike Lee also at one point. He had a movie called The 25th Hour. And you could not find out that was a Spike Lee movie until after it came out. Like, it was like a shock. I was like, wait a minute. Spike Lee did this movie. And it has a lot of Spike Lee-isms in it.
Or Zack Snyder. He has a feel to it, you know.
Yeah,
like, Zack Snyder movie, like, okay, there's gonna be slow motion action scenes going on, and it's gonna look really nice, and that's his thing. So is that what it all is about now? The director,
that's
is
what it seems to be about now.
We got 5 minutes. All right, so we're gonna have a naked lady run through my movie, and that's my signature.
That's the Mark Torres signature.
Or the Zucker brothers. You know, they always have stuff in the background going on.
Right.
That's their thing.
Their signature. Yeah.
So is that what it is to be a director, to have a signature, to instead of just making a good movie?
Directors, you look at a director like a painter. Like, you know, if you know enough paintings, you know about paintings, or you know an artist or a painter well enough, you'll be able to tell his work, no matter what he paints. So the good artists, it works for them. Bad artists, it works against them. You know, a bad artist uses lens flare, you know, or too much blue in his canvas paintings, and you're like, oh, this is George again. George loves the color blue, and I hate it. Whereas a good artist uses only blue.
Right.
Like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
So this kind of makes me think of comic book artists, as you mentioned artists, how certain artists had a signature thing, good or bad, and it made me immediately think of Rob Liefeld. How he purposely didn't draw ankles or feet. That was his thing.
Yeah.
And you could, it's Rob Liefeld because that's just his look.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's what you have over integrity, if that's what you have over artistic talent, then eventually, it'll work for a little while, but eventually it's going to be the same thing that brings you down. It's the same thing that kind of pigeonholes you and keeps you from going anywhere else, because you develop a style to take the place of actual talent.
Right.
And eventually that style gets old, like all styles do, or it becomes derivative, and people only know you for being that guy who tried to get over on a style instead of being an actual artist.
Wow.
And there you have it.
Wow, that was a pretty profound conversation
that you said.
Yes, I complimenting myself. So let's see, we got like 3 minutes left. Final thought, Hassan, which is myself.
Yes, directors are important, but they're good ones and there are bad ones. A bad director is just as important as a good director because he will destroy a movie.
I will say that the director is important only because they need somebody to hold everything together. That's how I'm gonna say. Without them, it's just gonna be a whole bunch of ad libbers and guys running around, and it'll just be a hodgepodge of mess, which we've seen in certain movies that are a hodgepodge of mess.
Where obviously the director either died or was asleep and nobody woke him up.
I was like, no, I'm not gonna go there. You action guys do your action stuff. You special effects guys do your special effects. You comedians just make some funny stuff up.
And I'm gonna walk around here in a circle.
Yeah, with my t-shirt that says I'm the director, and I'll just do 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 everything's all right. All right, then get my money. That's what it's about, right? Getting the money. So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you've missed any portion of the show, you can go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com, and the archives will be up in a week or so.
Yay.
We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.